This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is September 3rd, 1993, and this is tape 59, side 1. Yes.
Well, I mentioned about the Black and Hispanic commissions, and the legislature gave us a buck. Now, what they actually did then, they instituted that into law. So now it's a legal entity. Mm-hmm. But the buck was like, this is your fishing license. Go see if you can get some money. That was a disappointment. Incidentally, I don't happen to believe that I said earlier that we should corral people. You know, here are all the blacks, here are all the Hispanics, here are all the Asians, here are all the seniors, and, you know, all this corralling business, I don't believe in it. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that you need to push. There needs to be governmental push forward. All the things that relate to the discrimination is really basically in people's mind. Mm-hmm. You put laws and it kind of pushes it and brings it to their attention and gets them thinking about it. But nothing's ever going to be solved until people change their mind. Just listening, watching the television last night, I don't know the exact circumstance, but somewhere down south, there was an area that was all white. And they were trying to integrate it and had a black person who finally actually moved out. But next day was murdered, but it was coincidental. It had nothing to do with where it was. It was just there was another black young guy. That,
this is just recently?
Yeah.
In Vidor, Texas, I think it was.
Texas, okay. Mm-hmm. But then I'm listening to this woman. Now, this is today. And she's saying, I just believe in being with my kind. You know, she didn't have... That's today. Of course, that's in her head. You know, Texas can have all kinds of laws, but as long as that's in a person's head, what's going to happen? But so I knew that there needed to be a creditable group speaking for, on behalf of blacks and Hispanics. And that's where I came up with the commissions. And they exist today. The Senior Services Division exists today. Mm-hmm. The Senior Services Commission began with the commission, now a division. That exists today. We started all that. We spoke earlier about my indignation of the cross-burning and getting the bill passed on racial and religious harassment. Mm-hmm. And I feel very good about that. Mm-hmm. It was more of a signal of the law, but it was a signal saying, it's unacceptable practice. This is not something that the society should stand for. I wonder, with that statute, why in the world it seemed to grow during Goldschmidt's and now even Governor Roberts' tenure. This whole matter of harassment, and you know, it seems to be growing. I said, where's this bill? There's a law in the books. But anyway, I feel good about that. Mm-hmm. I said earlier that one of the things that I lamented that I could not do, that I wanted to do, was to get the state more involved in prevention. And I'm taking in the main crime, but child abuse and many other things that take place, that prevention really is a good way to go. And this is the way to go, and that we can get on top of the problem if we could empty the pipeline. Criminal justice is easiest to speak of because the jails are full. You can't say our Constitution says that criminal justice is based on reformation, but we're not reforming anybody. They go in and they go out. We're not really reforming anybody. And it's just because we have too many of them. We don't have time to do any of that. So I said, okay, in order to do this and do it correctly, to make, first of all, sure that there's certain punishment. If you're going to jail, you are going to jail. That's because you got space to put them. That there won't be decisions made. Well, we'll prosecute this. No, I won't do that because even if we convict them, we don't have jail space. You know, there's decisions being made. We have to empty the pipeline. Well, because all we could do was to take care of the things that we could take care of during this recession, I was unable to really institute a good program of prevention in the state. On my own then, we began something else. I can remember very vividly that the governor had not a very good looking office in the old state office building. And I gathered, actually there was about three, maybe four at the most, And I said, you know, what can we do about this? And I'm thinking about how are we going to formulate something with youth? And so out of that came health, fitness, and sports. And that just worked marvelously. And people were very interested. A lot of people are really interested in that sort of thing. And out of the health, fitness, and sports came the Oregon State Games. And the first Oregon State Game was in 1986, my last year in office. Today it's a super success. It's, I don't know how many, 14,000. And this is all ages, from young people to seniors. And it's a marvelous thing. I started that. The court reform, which is now taken for granted. Court reform. That puts the Chief Justice, the Chief Administrator of the entire court system in the state of Oregon. That would be appeals, circuit, district. And to have really operate more, the whole court system operate more efficiently. That is current practice. That's going on today. That was started by my administration. We were the first state to receive a waiver for alternatives to nursing home care. The federal government would pay the cost of, let's call it welfare nursing home care, if you were in a nursing home. And we went to them and we said, there are better ways of doing this. Why don't you let us try to find alternatives to the nursing home? In other words, you can pay, but not just if you go to a nursing home. So they finally, this was under the Carter administration, we got the very first waiver for alternatives to nursing home care. The thing I think I did mention earlier in the tape was the frustrating thing is that it came up for renewal 4 years later under President Reagan. Had a hell of a time getting to renew. I couldn't understand it. But we did. And I hear people speaking of it now today as being a great thing, but it was just because we thought we needed to find, you know, a better way of doing it. Not unlike, this goes back, you know, when you deal with the federal government, sometimes you have successes. We had a gasoline shortage during my administration. This was a nationwide thing. And the president, President Carter, and the administration, they were going to tell the states they had to conserve on gasoline. And they were going to tell them how to do it. And I went back there and I said, don't tell me how to do it. Tell me what your goal is. And then say, go do it. If I don't meet my goal, then you tell me what to do. By George, let us do it. And Oregon got through that very, very well. And we not only met the goal, we exceeded the goal for conservation. Exceeded it. But I just said, you know, don't tell me how. Just tell me, go do it. And anyway, once in a while you win. I mentioned earlier this job program for welfare applicants. One of the things you kind of worry about. I don't know whether you remember or not, but before Dukakis ran for president of the United States, and there was this work fair, and the caucus was getting a lot of attention for getting people off of welfare. And I said to Little Hexford, who was the head of the Department of Human Resources, Leo, you know, we've been doing this. Anyway, we looked at it and made a comparison. At that time, Massachusetts was very low unemployment. This was the Massachusetts miracle. Of course, they ran into some really bad times. But at that time, the Massachusetts miracle, we had high unemployment. So, okay, they've got high employment, we have high unemployment. We got more jobs. Now, I don't mean percentage according to the population. I mean actual more jobs for more people on welfare than Massachusetts did. And we did it for one-third the cost. and here we had all the disadvantages of unemployment. And so we did a hell of a lot better job. And yet, he gets some kind of national attention for it.
How did you go about accomplishing this?
Attention?
No. The but actually, that's an interesting area. But I mean, in terms of accomplishing your change in Oregon.
How did we?
How did you?
We just embarked on this program of working very hard to get jobs for people on welfare. Not only entering welfare, which I mentioned before, those that were on welfare. We just thought it was part of our job to help people pull through. A little unknown thing that doesn't exist today, and that is the commission doesn't exist, but the results of the commission does. And probably, it was the very first international thing that I did. I worried about the fact that foreign languages in school was almost dead. And so the very first, let me call it international thing, I appointed a commission on foreign languages in the schools. Some very good people. Very good people. And at their initiation, they began to figure out ways to get this thing going. Today, foreign language is very much alive and well in our schools. Mm-hmm. It was really almost dead in practically dead in 1979. But you have to lift people's minds out of provincialism, that foreign language are part of the world. Mm-hmm. It didn't make any difference what the language was. We didn't say take French or Spanish or anything, whatever you want to take, Russian or Japanese or Chinese, just four languages. And today is extremely healthy. So the result of that commission exists today. Obviously the commission is not supposed to last forever anyway. They did their job and did it successfully and went home. Part of trying to have government operate well, we formalized a state employee suggestion award program. Formalized it. That really worked extremely well. And the reward was 10% of what was saved, up to $5,000. I did get several $5,000 checks. And their savings were very large. Obviously over $500,000. But it was marvelous to see this, and it was operating. Incidentally, we did deliberately, the directors of state government were not participants. It had to be the employees. And that was because our system would put these suggestions through their managers. Mm-hmm. And obviously they say, he stole my idea and all the rest of that sort of thing. But it worked so well. I presented myself, at open house, checks to people in recognition. Two instances that I remember. It shows you what you're up against in public life. One day, I read the Oregonian that the OLCC had wasted, I think it was $3,600. Less sites from the article. Front page. Well, how the OLCC wasted the money is they had a training session, I think it was a Holiday Inn out by the airport. Mm-hmm. And part of the training concept was that everybody was to be together. Mm-hmm. And obviously there were people that lived in Portland that mm-hmm. went to the Holiday Inn. Mm-hmm. That's how they wasted. They could have gone home instead of going to the Holiday Inn. It is as if you went to the Benson or places like that. But anyway, that was the gist of what happened. I saw Les that morning. I said to him, Les, read the article. I think I can tell you that today, at my open house, I'm going to present a check to an upstate employee that saved $45,000. Nobody ever read about that. That wasn't even on the back pages. That was not news at all. That's how you get perplexed. You wonder about things like that. Front page wasted $3,600. Save $45,000.
Yeah.
That's not news.
What was his response to you when you mentioned that?
He said, He wasn't there. He wasn't at the open house. And of course, he appeared in the room. The other thing I remember, went over to Human Resource one time to make some presentations, employee suggestions. And there was a group of people. So I was kind of going around the table, you know, what was it you did? What did you do to receive this award? Finally, I got to one man, I said, what'd you do? He said, I recommended they eliminate my job. I'm sure he stayed in employment, but they eliminated the job. And he, you know, he was thinking about it. There's no need for this job. That's his recommendation. Well, the point was not how much, you see. You know, we're not looking. It was just the people were thinking about how can we do a better job of what we're doing. And the people that can best do that are the people that are doing it.
Yeah.
And so you get them thinking about it. So that was the motive. Get them thinking about it. Get them to think about how they can do a better job. And it worked marvelously well. Mm. I don't think it exists anymore, but we had it going. And it was a formal program. I mean, it was not ad hoc. It was a very formal program.
Why would they have discontinued a program like that?
There are some people who were not interested in saving tax dollars. Whoever they may be. I've already covered who they are. Well, those are some of the things that I've listed. I'm very proud of the fact that I personally traveled over a quarter million miles inside the state of Oregon. I think I've already made mention of the fact that I think the governors of both Goldschmidt and Roberts really are denying themselves one of the great pleasures of being the governor. I did not think it was cute, the electronic communication with Oregonians, and I thought, Barbara, you could really get a lot more information and do it in a much more pleasant way than via electronics and television set. But I'm really proud of that. I really am. I think it's in terms of whatever mark I may have put up on it, I enjoyed it. It wasn't a matter that I had to go. I was just down the state fair Wednesday, and you're still coming down. I said, hey, yeah, I didn't go to the state fair because I had to. I went to the state fair because I want to. It was very much, I went to every county fair in Oregon. Every county fair I've been in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And the staff said, you don't have to go, Governor. You know, maybe this is after my reelection or something. I said, hey, you think I'm going because I have to go. I'm going because I like it. It isn't because I have to go.
What other things did you really like doing as a governor?
Well, I like people. I like my open house. Mm-hmm. I really like my media availability. I did like traveling in Oregon. I truly did. I really liked it. Flying or on the ground. It was being with Oregonians. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. I wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet. This is not what you'd call something I've done, but it's something, one of the real values that occurred because I was governor. I met President Nixon, President Carter, President Ford, President Reagan, President Bush, been in the White House a great number of times, flown in Air Force One. I have personally met, not just in the mob, but one-on-one, with President Mubarak of Egypt, mm-hmm. President Assad of Syria, Prime Minister Shamir mm-hmm. of Israel, Nakasone of Japan, Prime Minister Nakasone, Zhao Zhang, who was then Premier of China, President Chun of Korea, President Park, who was assassinated of Korea, President Chung of Taiwan, who's passed away, and that I met and know President Lee of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Those are great opportunities that I wouldn't have had any other way. And I think to some degree, if someone would remember, you know, it leaves a good flavor about the state of Oregon, and how does anyone know what some of that might be? I'm not through.
You're what?
I'm not through.
You're not through. Oh, good.
In a more generic sense. When I look back at my administration, at least 5 of my 8 years, maybe a little bit more, we slid into a recession and emerged out of recession. Mm-hmm. And in our history, state of Oregon history, there have been 8 special sessions called to rebalance the budget. Now we've got more special sessions, but for the purpose of rebalancing the budget, there were 8. I called 4 of the 8, 3 in 1 year. And it kind of was an indication of the time in which we lived. But I am proud of the fact that we did manage government without destroying it. It really was the worst of times, but we kept government on an even keel, and we moved forward at the same time on programs that were important to the future. We moved forward on improving higher education. We moved forward certainly in terms of economic development. And so while we were consumed with the problem of food system, I think as I've listed other things, but in a major way, the diversification of the economy, which indeed has happened. And I, with some degree of pride, notice when economists are talking about the general economy of Oregon, they say, well, we've done well because we have a diversified economy. Well, we didn't have in 1979. We did have when I left office in 1987. It's always interesting to me that people refer to me as boring and non-charismatic. Matter of fact, I was interviewed by Mike Wallace at 60 Minutes. He didn't use it. Whatever I said, they found it not exciting at all, not interesting.
Maybe that's a compliment.
Well, it could be. But, you know, he just asked questions and I answered them, but not in a charged way that 60 Minutes liked, so mm-hmm. They never did use it when they aired it. But, you know, it's interesting. You look back on it. I ran 20 races. I lost one. I ran against particularly statewide major candidates. I was clearly in 1978 against former Governor McCall, against then Governor Bob Strom. Mm-hmm. Against Clay Myers in my first race in the primary, against Tim Kulongoski, we covered that pretty well. But I won all my races except one. And I keep speculating, maybe it's for my own ego, but you know, Ford hadn't pardoned Nixon until after the November election, who knows, it might have been different. I don't know. But that was the race that I lost. I was chairman of the Western Governors Association, chairman of the Republican Governors. Really, I had the one loss to Bob Straub in 74, and then I would count the sales tax, which we covered in 1985. Mm-hmm. Really about the only 2 real losses, the political losses, major political losses I had. And so you wonder, with a fellow that's boring and non-charismatic, how does he do that? So the story, take a look and see if you can figure it out. There is, to my knowledge, and I can't really go back much beyond 1959, backward, when I go forward, unprecedented access. Unprecedented. From legislators, the public in my open houses, my media availability on a weekly basis, state agencies. At, you know, at a time of stress, a lot of people would keep their head below the trenches and not be accessible. I mentioned earlier about traveling the state. I had these open houses all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody, doors were open, 12:31 o'clock when I was in Salem. There I am. Mm-hmm. Just, I don't think anyone's had the access. Any other governors provided the access for people. And I liked it. I liked it. Legislators had, you know, priority. They would knock on my door, even though, you know, I've got appointments. Obviously, I don't have them in my office. They knock on the door, they're there. That's not true. Hasn't been true. I know for sure it was not true under Governor Goldschmidt's regime. And I know it's not true under Governor Roberts. Access. McCall had access. Straub less so. Hatfield somewhat. But I don't think anyone had the broad access that I put together. And so I think if anyone looks at it, okay, but that's part of the character of Governor Attia. I said many times that I'm chief executive of the biggest business in Oregon. Mm-hmm. 45,000 employees, branch offices in most counties and most cities. It was interesting. I really thoroughly understood government, budgets, sources of revenue. State managers knew it. And the important thing here was that this was not, you know, a lot of times they say, well, he's going to be gone, and I'm here, and I'll do it my way. He really won't notice. That's not the kind of thing they deal with me, because they knew I would notice. But you know, when I would select my department heads, I'd say, I am asking you to do this job because I think you can. And besides, I expect you to. And they responded to that. You know, so often the people in government have been snagged by a leash and say, go do it, but keep telling me what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I said, you're talented. I know your talent. I want to use your talent. Go do it. I said to them, I'm willing for you to make a mistake. I said that to the state employees. I said that to the state managers, two different groups. And what I was really saying to them is that I want innovation. I will take the heat with you, or I'll accept it myself. I want you to be innovative. I want you to try ideas. I knew that the files in the state capitol were filled with what I call save your ass paper. Mm-hmm. Oh, it wasn't my fault. See here, this piece of paper protects me. And it's a shame. The public doesn't allow government to make a mistake. Remember this OLCC page thing. That stymies innovativeness. Mm-hmm. It does. You can't get the best out of it. I said to him, you know, I'm not asking you to go make a mistake, but I'm willing for you to make a mistake. As long as you say, I tried this and this is the reason I tried it and it just didn't work, that's good enough for me. And that was a matter of making government function the way government ought to function. The way suggestion to Ward was one.
Right.
I want you to be innovative, pick the best people, and give them good direction. That's how things happen. Another thing that's been very difficult for governors, all governors, and that sort of ebbs and flows, but I think it was pretty well taken care of. While I was governor, I really, this what we call the other Oregon, mm-hmm. outside of Portland, Salem, Eugene, I really feel like they've left out of the whole mm-hmm. thing. And I think there was greater comfort that they really had somebody that was looking out for their interest, meaning in the other Oregon.